Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy. So thankful to be able to be with you this week live from Mount Vernon, Texas, after having been gone for some 2 weeks, and appreciate your patience there. Certainly thankful for the opportunities that we have had to travel and to be a part of relief efforts in South Texas, and certainly ask that you continue to keep those brethren in your prayers. We've had a great ability to work with the Riverside congregation in the Aransas area, and also with the Vider Church of Christ in Vider, Texas, around the Orange area. And so many have been affected. So many are striving to help out, and we're thankful for that, but ask as well that you continue to keep these brethren and all of those in your prayers, as well as Florida, as the results there are just now coming in some ways, as far as the destruction that has come about with Irma. And so we want to remember them. We have a lot of events that I would like to go back as well and remind you of that are ongoing. One going on this week is the Searching the Scriptures Forum at the Broadway Church of Christ in Tyler, Texas. And this is their annual forum looking at questions that have been submitted by the congregation and others. And so they have three panelists each year. And this year, Chris Groda, Sam Wilcutt, and Robert Johnson are those panelists. And so that got kicked off last night, and you have opportunities to join them or listen in tonight and tomorrow night at 7 p.m. If you can make it to the Tyler area, know that they would love to have you. Again, that's the Broadway Church of Christ. If not, visit tgrn.org and click on the special link there at the bottom for that event, and you'll be able to listen in live. Looks like tonight we're going to be talking about suicide, the Great Commission, as well as what does exactly Philippians 4:8 mean? Should we always be thinking only on spiritual matters, or are there other things that need to come to our attention as well? What does it mean in 1 Corinthians 16 not to be revilers? And also, how do we teach about authority? And then the difference between miracles and providence. And so those are some of the questions that hope to be addressed tonight. And so hope you can join them either live and in person or right here on the Gospel Radio Network. As well, I want to remind you of an upcoming marriage and family seminar, September 15th through the 17th. This is going to be at the Granbury Street Church of Christ in Cleburne, Texas. And time has passed, I'm sure, for registration, but you can give the congregation there a call and see. They may still have some spots open, and that's coming up this weekend. And so visit cleburne.church, and you can find out more information on that event. Also want to continue to remind you of a upcoming event, September 23rd. And this is with Camp Ida. We are hosting an open house, and this is a way for us to say thank you to those that have helped this past year and making some great changes to the camp, but also for those who are interested in the camp, come out and see what's going on. Learn about the things that have already been accomplished, and also learn about some upcoming additions and revisions to the camp. And so hope you can join us for that day. We're going to kick off around 11, and you can come and go, but at the noon hour we'll be serving hamburgers and also have some words from John McCormick and an update concerning some of the work of the camp. And so that's just a little over a week away, Saturday, September 23rd, hosted at Camp Ida in Maud, Texas. Then as well, I wanted to make you know of a Ladies' Day that's coming up at the North Main Church of Christ in Malvern, Arkansas. That is going to be September 23rd. Lisa Harris will be the speaker for that. They register at 9 a.m. and kick off at 9:30 a.m. And so they would like you to RSVP at area code 225-326-9179. You can also visit malvernchurchofchrist.org, churchofchrist.org to find more information. A new one that has been sent to us is a gospel meeting at the Lovelady Church of Christ in Lovelady, Texas. This is going to be with John Moore on September 24th through the 27th. And John is going to be talking about Bible land passages, a Bible or a pathway to faith and devotion. And so looking at the Bible lands and the lessons that we can learn from them. And so I know that they would love to have you there at the Lovelady Church of Christ. And then also, for those in the Northeast Texas area, want to remind you of the upcoming Bible Bowl season. Kicks off Monday, October 9th, and so begin studying. We're looking at 1st and 2nd Corinthians this year, and that first test will be over 1st Corinthians 1 through 4. And so certainly hope that you can make plans to be with that. They're always held at the North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas, on the second Monday of the month at 7 p.m. And so be looking forward to those events that are coming up as well. And so those are some of the things that are going on in the area. Hope that you can be a part of that, encourage them. Also, before I forget, want to remind you of the upcoming Gospel Radio Network lectures as well that are going to be coming up November 4th and 5th, and we'll have the schedule out on that here hopefully this week. And so, mark your calendars for that, as we're looking forward to that great day together as well. And so, as always, a lot going on here in the fall, and a lot to be active in and participate in as well. With that, let us get started in our study this morning as we continue through the Old Testament and pass rapidly now as we begin to head out of some of the wisdom. And tomorrow we'll begin kicking off with the book of Isaiah and getting into the prophets. And I always love the study of the prophets, and so hope that you'll be reading ahead. You can be looking there in the book of Isaiah. And get a head start there for Chip, who, Lord willing, will be with us in the morning, and be ready to study through that book with us as well. But this morning, we're going to be wrapping up a study in the Song of Solomon, looking at Solomon, Song of Solomon, chapter 5 through chapter 8. And so I hope that you can join us there. Richard and Nate led us through that study yesterday in the first four chapters, and we'll have opportunity now to wrap it up. As we look at this book, we're reminded of, in many ways, I guess you could say, a great love story. A love story of courting, a love story of a marriage, a love story of biblical love. Certainly we see in this the grand idea of the love that God designed between a man and a woman, that he implemented the marriage relationship for. And we get to see through this book this courtship, this falling in love, this love that developed between Solomon and his wife. And many believe that this was early in Solomon's life. Very likely, maybe this was his first wife, and the love and the devotion here that they had one for another. And in chapters 1 through 4, that, many believe, is here the courting, the dating process, we would maybe say today. Really, chapters 1 through the first part of chapter 3, that's that courtship of that bride and the groom, and then the wedding procession and the honeymoon in chapters 3 through the first verse of chapter 5. But we're going to have opportunity to look at what may well have been some marital difficulty, some time here in which there was some estrangement, some difficulty that had arisen in the marriage. But that difficulty gets resolved, and then you have the growth of that marital bliss. And so a great book of love and concern one for another, that reminder that God indeed designed this wonderful relationship between one man, one woman for life, the love that is shown both from the husband to the wife and the wife to the husband, the devotion that they have one to another. I would encourage you to think about, as you read through this book, how they speak of one another, They speak of each other in terms of love and compassion and admiration, not in terms that would degrade one another. Certainly we need to think about how we treat all people, but certainly our spouses as well. And there is a devotion that is shown between these individuals as we read of their love one for another. And so with that, let us go on, and we'll begin this morning in Song of Solomon chapter 5, and look there in verse 1. Again, this might be towards the end of that honeymoon period. They have been married maybe shortly before some passing of time in which a difficulty has arisen in that marriage. And so Song of Solomon 5 and verse 1, he says, "I am come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved." Here is the rejoicing. This marriage has come together. He is still rejoicing in this. He's inviting others to join in this wedding party or this wedding feast. And so he is sharing that joy. He is excited about this new relationship. He is rejoicing in that. And so he is inviting, as we said, even those others to join in with that and expressing that joy. And certainly we can understand, even from the idea of a newlywed concept there, how much happiness, how much love, how much joy that we express even to others. But we also begin to understand, even as we make jokes about it, that honeymoon period ends. Certainly we are, as it were, on cloud nine when we enter into that marriage, but that love that has been developed is going to be challenged. That love that develops is going to have some hardships along the way. It's going to have some difficulties that arrive from time to time. And the question is, what then? Sadly, we live in a society that too often says when those difficulties arrive, it's time for us to go our separate ways. The easiest way to resolve them is simply to say, well, we must not have been as compatible as we thought we were, and so we will divorce, we'll go our own ways, and each one can go and find someone that maybe is more compatible with them. And it's no surprise then with that concept that there are people that we come across in this life that have been married 4, 5, or 6 different times. Because as soon as the difficulties, as soon as the problems arrive in life, then we set that aside, we move on from that relationship, and we search for something else. And as long as that concept continues to be within our mind, we don't expect any kind of change. But here, what we're going to get to see is this marriage, this love, is going to be challenged, but it's not going to be brought to an end. Marriage, like any relationship, and maybe even more than any other relationship, is going to need the principles that we could go into Philippians chapter 2 and talk about, the sacrificial love that at times is willing to put the needs and the concerns of others above ourselves. So many times in a marriage, there are those who simply will not yield their desires to someone else. They will not consider putting someone else before themselves, and so those marriages will come to an end. But here we see quite the opposite. I think there of Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 2, and he is, of course, speaking here to Christians in general, but he says, "Fulfill my joy that you may be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. And let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." Again, those are instructions written concerning everyday relationships, and especially relationships between brothers and sisters in Christ. how much more should those concepts be applied to that closest relationship that we'll enjoy in this life, and that is the marriage relationship? That I'm willing to put the needs, the wants, the desires of someone else even above myself, rather than demanding that I always have my own way, that I'm willing to consider someone else. I think about that even in concern of Ephesians chapter 5, and of course maybe there we go most often when we think about the marriage relationship. Have no doubt that Richard and Nate hit on some of this even yesterday. But as we think about what is written here concerning this marriage relationship and the husband and the wife, it comes to an understanding that if this relationship is going to be what God wants it to be, then it's going to require each party, as it were, the each spouse to consider their role, and each spouse to consider one another. And so we read, even going back into Ephesians 5 and verse 22, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord." You have a role, you have a responsibility. Yours is to submit to the leadership of the husband, the spiritual head of that household. And so, wives, submit yourselves to your husband. If that marriage is going to be what it ought to be, then there is going to be that submission to my husband who, as we're going to see in a moment, I can trust has my best interest and my best desires at heart. And again, we get back into those concepts of Philippians 2, considering one another. And so he continues, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything." And verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. And so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself." And so, husbands, you have a role, you have a responsibility as well, and that is to love your wife. You're going to put her interest, her needs above even your own. You're going to be seeking after her spiritual best interest in her life. And so as the head of that family, as the head of that house, you recognize your grave responsibility. Not to be lord and master as such, not just to get your own way, but to seek that which is best for all that are involved in that family unit. And so husbands, you have a role, you have a responsibility as well. You love your wife. And if more people entered into the marriage relationship with those concepts that are embedded in Ephesians chapter 5, I have no doubt there would be many more marriages that would last as God intended. They would last for life, because each party is going to be seeking the best interest. Each party is going to be giving 100% into that marriage relationship. Does it mean that all of a sudden, because I have that concept, there's going to be no difficulties, there's going to be no hardships, there's never going to be a problem that comes about? Absolutely not. But those principles of love, compassion, understanding, selflessness, when we have those concepts, then it's going to help us weather those storms that are going to come. And so, while we don't necessarily see it in the text, we go back to Song of Solomon. There's the joy, there's the honeymoon relationship in Song of Solomon 5 and verse 1. There's the joy and the rejoicing and all the happiness that goes with it. But while it's not recorded there in the text, it seems some passing of time has now occurred. It seems some period has gone on here in which this marriage has continued and maybe has even come into some sort of hardship. There is some, at least slight form of estrangement as they have drifted apart. The husband has gone about his work. The wife has gone about her life. And now she's missing that which they once had. Now, instead of speaking to her husband, she is speaking about her husband to someone else, to her friends and others. And so let's continue reading there in the Song of Solomon in verse 2, chapter 5 and verse 2. Here the bride speaks. She says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. And so she wakes as if in this dream, and perhaps this is a dream. Perhaps this is this longing that she now feels there's some separation between us. And now this is only in my dreams that these things are occurring. It is in my dreams that he has come to me. Or perhaps it is even this is something that is unfolding in her life. But she has slept, but now she is remembering, she is hearing that he is coming to her once again. And so now her husband is once again seeking her courtship or her companionship. In verse 3, we return to her thoughts, and she says, I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? I've gone to bed. There's some hesitation here as to whether she's going to rise for her husband or not. After all, I've gone to the effort. I've already laid down for the night. Am I going to get up? And she thinks here as these events unfold. Verse 4, my beloved put his hand in the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. It's as if he's getting ready to open the door. And verse 5, I rose up to open to my beloved. My hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. She arises now after that hesitation, arises to help him enter. But I opened, verse 6. But my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. My soul failed when he spake. I sought him, but could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. Again, perhaps these are events that have occurred in the waking, as it were, that because of her hesitation, because of whatever separation has gone on between them, that now he has departed and gone about his way after having sought after her. Perhaps this is, again, still part of her dream, that she is thinking of this rough period of their relationship, that she longs for him to come, but when she seeks after him, he's not there. And so this difficulty that has arisen between them. Now, when she takes advantage of the opportunity to rise and go to her husband, he's not there. He's not at the door any longer when she opens it. And so she will go, and she will search for him, but she's not able to find him. She's looking and calling out for him, but he is giving no answer. Verse 7, the watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the wall took away my veil from me. She's not recognized as she goes about the city seeking after him, and so would find ill treatment. Now she's going to call out for help in verse 8. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell ye him that I am sick of love. Probably there the idea, she is sick with love. She is longing for him once again. And so while she has faced this ill treatment, she's calling out to others, her friends, the daughters here of Jerusalem, and saying, pass along this message. If you see my love, tell him to return unto me. There's this almost indignation in this response. Well, verse 9, what is your beloved more than any other beloved? O thou fairest among women, oh, what is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? What's so special about him? Why should we be interested? Why should we spend our time looking for him? And now again, this response of the bride concerning her husband. And notice still the love and the affection that's shared here. She is going to speak well of her husband even when they are facing this difficulty. My beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000. His head is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy, black as a raven. His eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as bed of spices, as flowers, as sweet flowers. His lips like lilies, dropping with sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with beryl. His belly as bright ivory overlaid with sapphire. His legs are as pillars of marble set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. You want to know what's special about my husband? You want to know what's special about the one that I am searching for? He is mine. I love him. And she is going to go on. He is the one that I desire. He is the one that I know. And again, I couldn't stress more the idea that even during this period of separation, now her heart is turning back to her husband, but she is going to speak so well of him. She is going to proclaim his beauty, his characteristics, beautiful black hair back in verse 11, the beautiful eyes there in verse 12, his lips, verse 13, his strong, attractive hands there in verse 14. His belly, possibly there is a hole for his body. She is proclaiming the beauty of it from his shoulders to his feet. He is handsome. He is the one that I am searching after. And so from head to toe, she is describing here her husband, the one that is most sweet to her, the one that she is seeking after. She loves him. And he is important to her. How do we think about our own spouses? Do we praise and admire them? Have we grown complacent that now we have won over the heart of the one that we love and we have forgotten them? He or she continues to be in love with her husband. She continues to praise and admire him. With that note, now the daughters of Jerusalem will once again speak as we shift into chapter 6. Whither is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest among women? Whither is thy beloved turned aside that we may speak with him? You have expressed your desire. You want us to help you find him. You want us to pass along this message, but now where do we look? Consider their own hearts. They haven't been that interested as you go back into chapter 5 when she first asked. There doesn't seem to be a lot of interest. Oh, why should we be bothered? Oh, but we see the love that you have expressed. We see the heart that you have poured forth. And so now we will help you. Where do we start? Where do we go looking for him? And she says, my beloved has gone down into his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed in the gardens, to gather his lilies. Perhaps here the idea simply, he's going about his work. He's returned into the fields. He's going to feed his flock. He's going about the work that he is about. So she says in verse 3, I am my beloved's. And my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. Again, the mutual love. The connection that they have one to another. He is mine, I am his. We need to remember that relationship in our marriages as well. That in that sense, we belong one to another. I am my wife's. My wife is mine. We have promised ourselves one to another. And we are dedicated to continuing in that relationship. Now it seems as we shift, now Solomon, the husband, is going to begin speaking. Thou art beautiful, O my love, as Tirzah, coming as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Tirzah here indicating grace and beauty. She is fair like Jerusalem, as impressive as any passing army. There are a lot of interesting, metaphors and similes used through the book of the Song of Solomon, not all that we would consider necessarily terms of endearment in our language today. But here is Solomon that is expressing his love in terms that meant something to him as a shepherd, as a military man, as other things. These are the things he knows. So those things that are considered beautiful, he's highly elevating his wife in his speech and his language as well with using those terms. And so maybe we wouldn't think of an army on display and think that's a fitting expression to describe our wife, but to Solomon it was a great term of endearment. Oh, you are as impressive, you are as beautiful, you mean as much to me as any passing army that's passing on parade with its banners. Turn away thine eyes from me, for they have overcome me. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appeared from Gilead. Thy teeth are as a flock of sheep which go up from the washing, whereof every one beareth twins, and there is not a barren among them. As a piece of pomegranate are thy temples within thy locks. They are 80 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. My dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one of her mother. She is the choice one of her that bare her. The daughters saw her and blessed her, yea, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. Who is she that looketh forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners? Here again, as he is describing his wife, we notice these same terms of affection, noting here the beauty, her hair, noting even here the beautiful teeth of white. It seems even as you drop down into verse 8 and 9 and 10 that he is describing here, there are thousands upon thousands of queens and concubines and virgins, but you are the one. There may be millions upon millions, but you are the only one for me. We think about that when we think about our spouse. Do we think about the vows that we have made one to another, forsaking all others? There's no other that I'm going to seek after. There's no other that I want. You are the one for me. You are the one that I want to spend my life with. Again, I don't know that this was a... In fact, later it's going to be addressed as something as concerning her sister. And so it's not that she is the only one that has come forth from her mother, but you are the chief. You are the choicest. You're not the only woman that exists in the world, but you are the one that I want. You are the one that I love. You are the one that I have compassion toward. You are the one that I have chosen to be my wife. And so again, their hearts are turning once again. That fire that once burned as we think back towards the first four chapters concerning their courtship and their marriage and their joy at coming together as husband and wife is being sparked and reunited once again. As she has praised him, and now he is praising her. Yea, even, he says there in verse 9, all the others will praise you because of your great beauty. You're as fair as the morning, verse 10. Now it seems verse 11 of chapter 6, we shift back to the bride speaking. I went down into the garden of nuts to see the fruits of the valley and to see whether the wine flourished and the pomegranates budded. Wherever I was aware, my soul made me like the chariots of Amminadab. Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon thee. What will you see in the Shulamite as it were the company of two armies? And so here now we have verse 11 and 12 seems to be the woman speaking. She has gone about, she has checked on the garden, she has gone about her daily activities, but notice she's thinking about her husband. Her mind is on him. And then in verse 13, as it were, even the others that recognize her beauty, they have called upon her to dance, a dance of joy, a dance of rejoicing once again. Nothing here that would indicate anything inappropriate. But the daughters of Jerusalem calling upon her possibly to have that joy that was sparked once again, that joy that was seen during the time of her courting and the times of that marriage, want it to return once again, and they will praise her. Chapter 7 and verse 1, "How beautiful are thy feet with shoes, O prince's daughter! Thy joints of the thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a cunning workman. Thy navel is like a round goblet which wanteth not liquor. Thy belly is like a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins. Thy neck is as a tower of ivory. Thine eyes like the fish pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bathrimmon. Thy nose is as the tower of Lebanon, which looketh toward Damascus. Thine head upon thee is like Carmel, the hair of thine head like purple. The king is held in the galleries. How fair and how pleasant art thou, O love for delights! This is thy thy stature is like to a palm tree, thy breast to clusters of grapes. I said, I will go up to the palm tree, I will take hold of the boughs thereof. Now also thy breast shall be as clusters of the vine, and the smell of thy nose like apples, and the roof of thy mouth like the best wine from my beloved, that goeth down sweetly, causing the lips of those that are asleep to speak. I am my beloved, and his desire is toward me." Again, we shift back. it seems we have a shift in verse 1 to verse 2. Possibly here, verse 1 is drifting back to Song of Solomon 16 and verse 13. Or 6 verse 13, as they have called upon her to dance, and now they are praising her and her beauty. But then I have little doubt, verse 2 through verse 9 that we read is Solomon, is the husband that is praising her, his wife, that once again is going to speak of her beauty, once again is going to speak of her as his treasure. Again, I think we live in a society that looks down upon that because it seems to express this idea of ownership. But really, we have given each ourselves to one another. And that seems to be what is going on. He is thankful here for what he has. He is thankful for his wife. He is thankful for the relationship that they get to enjoy. You know, here is not just the companionship we get to enjoy, the physical relationship we get to enjoy as a husband and wife, but the time that we get to spend together. All of these things he is thankful for. And so he has gone through once again, in terms that probably if I use them to my wife, she may not be thankful for or even recognize the significance of today. Thy head is like Carmel. Well, Carmel had a nice round, soft rounded top as far as the mountains go, or hair of purple. Well, it was a deep, dark color that was appreciated. And so head to toe, she's being described as beautiful. Your nose is like a tower of Lebanon. Well, again, maybe not the best terms we would use today, but he is praising her characteristics. He is showing her, these are the things that I appreciate about you. These are the things that I love. Your nose is straight and beautiful. The king here speaking of her, oh, how pleasant, verse 6, how fair and pleasant are you. Yes, indeed, he is thankful for his wife. Now, I wonder here as we look even down into verse 10, I am my beloved and his desire is toward me. Certainly, again, the wife that is speaking, and how she is comforted. I hear the words of my husband. I hear the praise and the love with which he speaks about me. And now I have hope. You see, we open back in chapter 5. As you get down into verse 2, there's this at least dream sequence, if not the real-life event, of how she has hesitated. Do I really want to get up for my husband? And when she does get up, he's gone. But now we get down here into chapter 7 and verse 10, and there's this reassurance. I know that I am His and that He is mine. I know that He loves me. And so there is a comfort that is going to go to her, that she can know, yes, indeed, my husband loves me. Yes, indeed, he admires me. He cherishes me. Come, verse 11, come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourish, whether the tender grape appear and the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give thee my loves. The mandrakes give a smell, and at our gates are all manner of pleasant fruits, new and old, which I have laid up for thee, O my beloved. Oh, that thou wert as my brother that sucked the breast of my mother. When I should find thee without, I would kiss thee. Yea, I would not be despised. I would lead thee and bring thee into my mother's house, who would instruct me. I would cause thee to drink of the spiced wine of the juice of my pomegranate. His left hand should be under my head. His right hand should embrace me. As I think here in these verses here, verse 11, and she wants to go into the countryside and let us go apart together. Again, we see this separation that has somehow come between them back in chapter 5. Now she's saying, let us go forth together into the countryside. Let us go forth together and go about our work and go about our lives. They have come through whatever difficulty they have encountered in their marriage. How do we see that? Well, the love that is expressed from the wife to the husband, the love that's been reaffirmed and expressed from the husband to the wife. Now they are reminded one to another that they are devoted to one another. They have dedicated themselves to one another. And so now this attitude, let us go forth together, there seems to be a significant change there in the song. And so let us go forth and give ourselves one to another. There have been provisions made, verse 13. She has laid these things up for them, preparations to this, that we can go forth without shame. I think even the idea there that maybe the language sounds weird to us of chapter 8 and verse 1, but there was no shame in kissing her brother. There was no shame in kissing her husband, for they are one. Let's go into my mother. Her mother would teach her to be a wife. We see the dedication once again one to another in verse 4 of chapter 8. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that you stir not up or awake my love until he please. You don't go forth tempting my husband. He is mine, and I am his. Who is this? Verse 5. It cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved. I raised thee up under the apple tree. There thy mother brought thee forth. There she brought thee forth that bare thee. Set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm. For love is strong as death. Jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which hath a most vehement flame. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be contemned. The bride and the groom, verse 5, once again are coming up together. The beautiful imagery there of the husband and the wife that are coming up together, even under this apple tree. This is potentially here the idea of this is where our love flourished. This is where it was brought forth, that apple tree where we once courted, where we met one another, where our love for one another grew. And so verse 6, set me as a seal upon thine heart. This request for love, she is holding on to him and resting on him. She is once again trusting in him. They have come together to be one. As the husband and wife, they have come together and the idea that expressed there in verse 6 and verse 7, love is strong as death. Love is strong, even enough to cope with death. Love, here, we are going to be reminded, will endure even the difficulties and the hardships of life. Verse 7, love is strong, and it is like a fire that will not go out. the value of love. I think there, as you look through this song, there's that reminder there that for two people that are dedicated to one another, that for two people who will love one another and put the best interest of one another at the utmost, that their love can endure all things. Are there going to be hardships? Are there going to be difficulties? Yes. But these two have come back together. Their love has ridden through this storm. Their love has ridden through this difficulty, and they have come back together once again. Verse 8, we have a little sister, she hath no breast. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she shall be spoken for? If she be a wall, we will build upon her a place of silver, and if she be a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. She is interested here. She is interceding for her sister. How can we help her? How can we help her as she begins to grow and to mature? Verse 9, if she is a wall, if she is steadfast in her purity, we will honor her, we will build her up. But if she is open as a door, if she is not cautious, we will protect her. We will enclose her with those boards of cedar. They're interested there, even in her purity, to keep her for her day of marriage, that she can enjoy the same love that they now enjoy one for another. And so even this bride, this wife, is interested in that sister that she had. Verse 11, I had a vineyard. Verse 10, I am a wall on my breast like towers. Then was I in his eyes as one that found favor. She's describing here herself. She was a good woman. She was virtuous. And now she has found this favor in her husband, and that's what she wants for her sister. And so verse 11, Solomon had a vineyard at Bel Haman. He let out the vineyard unto keepers. Every one for the fruit thereof was to bring 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, which is mine, is before me. Thou, O Solomon, must have 1,000, and those that keep the fruit thereof, 2,000. Describing again her beauty, her innocence, Solomon is to have his due. Her brothers had protected her and should have a reward. She had been kept pure for that relationship. Thou that dwellest in the gardens, the companions, hearken to thy voice, cause me to hear it, making this request of the king. Make haste, my beloved. Be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of spices. Again, no longer separate, but together as husband and wife. Friends, there's a lot of lessons, certainly, as you go through this, and many more that we have skimmed over as we have tried to cover the main ideas. But what we see before us, again, is a lovely picture as you read through this. And sadly, many have tried to weaken the Song of Solomon, I believe, in weakening in its application and merely making it an application maybe of Christ and the church. And, even Paul will make those applications there in Ephesians 5. But some have, unfortunately, as well corrupted the Song of Solomon. There are certainly, as we would describe them, adult themes in the Song of Solomon, but there's no reason to make this a book one that's inappropriate either. What the book is before us is one of a great love story, of a man and a woman that have come to know one another, of a man and a woman whose love has flourished, of a man and a woman who have been married, dedicated themselves one to another, of a man and a woman who have some difficulties as they go through that marriage relationship, even some time there of some separation in which they begin to miss one another, but they come back together. Their love is rekindled, their love is reunited, and when we close the book, we see them going forth together as a husband and as a wife once again. And so it's that beautiful love picture, that love story, that yes, that love is strong and it can endure the problems and the difficulties of life. You see, we're not promised as individual Christians that everything is always going to go well in our lives, and we're not promised even in our marriage relationships. And even when we're dedicated one to another, and even when we are dedicated into serving and honoring God, things are always going to be exactly as they should be in our relationships. But we can refocus, rekindle that love once again, and have that strong marriage, that strong relationship between one another again. Instead of giving up on it, instead of quitting, they were dedicated one to another. Certainly a lesson that we should learn from that as well. And so that beautiful love picture before us. And with that, we close the Song of Solomon. We close our time together even this morning. As we mentioned at the beginning, I hope that you would be able to join in with us tomorrow. Lord willing, Chip is going to be starting us in our study of Isaiah. I'll be looking there in Isaiah 1 through 5 as we begin talking about the woes of Isaiah, the prophecies that are going forth as God is calling his people back to him. There are, I think, some connections we make between those prophets and the Song of Solomon, between God and his bride, his people, and wanting to restore that relationship once again. But anyway, we will get into that as we look at the prophets and God calling them once again to be faithful or to face the consequences thereof. And so I hope you'll begin looking ahead and that you're benefiting even as we are from these studies. And so as we sign off this morning, hope that you have a wonderful day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.